Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to another installment of a beautiful podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you so very much for asking.
I've been crazy busy the last week, working on my DevOps UK deep dive. That's coming, soon. I've been watching KubeCon, right, down in Los Angeles, which is my hometown. And I regret I couldn't be there in person. Goodness knows I'd love to have been there. But I've been watching KubeCon. I've been lining up podcast guests. I've been putting together my next Spring Tips video, setting up my twitch.tv stream. Check that out, by the way. I am going to start streaming under twitch.tv Java Josh Long. And of course, occasionally, as I always do, under twitch.tv/ VMware Tanzu under the code show. I've also been heavily updating my, feed, whatever that means. My feed is the list of things I've been doing every week, right? And so if you go to joshlong.com, you'll notice a few things. First, that website looks like it was it's from the 1990s and somebody used front page to put it together. And that's a fair point, but you don't have to be so mean about it. Now it's going to get better. But in the meantime, it's functional, even if the form isn't what it could be, right? It leaves a lot to be desired. But if you pull up joshlong.com/feed.html, you'll have been able to see all of my posted upcoming appearances, events, videos, episodes, podcast episodes, rather, etc. But the novelty, the new thing, is that information is now visible on the front page as a blog post. So for every upcoming event, for every podcast, for every video, whatever, it automatically eventually lands on joshlong.com as a blog post. So you can, and there's an RSS feed there. So if you're one of those retro RSS fans like I am, then subscribe and you'll be notified of everything that I'm doing. And you can watch videos and listen to podcasts and read blogs and all that stuff. And of course, that all that information is actually in turn drawn from a number of other different feeds that I have, right? I have a feed that gets updated every time I publish a new podcast. I have a feed that gets updated every time I publish a new public appearance, right? If I'm going to be speaking at a conference or doing a class or whatever, right? If I'm going to be anywhere public, you'll find a mention of it here. I've got another feed that gets updated every time I do another Spring Tips video. So every week, you know, there's new stuff all the time. I've got new blogs, new videos, new podcasts, and now streams and so on. So this a lot of that stuff, a lot of those systems and processes that I put in place to automate or simplify the work of publishing this stuff, a lot of that I run on top of GitHub, right? Who doesn't, right? It's the hub for all of our gits, right? And this in turn, you know, just thinking about it, this in turn has made me realize just how much I love and use GitHub. I have a ton of small sites and services that I run and use, and that wouldn't be half so easy to get out there but for GitHub and GitHub Actions and GitHub Pages and so on. So that got me to thinking about how much I actually use GitHub. I live in GitHub almost as much as I do IntelliJ, right? I mean, it might be the second most frequently used piece of software in my life after IntelliJ and after, you know, Visual Studio Code or Sublime, you know, kind of half-half between those two. But I, in terms of a SaaS, it is certainly the most frequently used thing I use, right? I'm in GitHub all the time. And on reflection, that, you know, I was like, I wonder the extent of that. I wonder what the extent of all that is. And so I took stock and my goodness, I have 499 repositories in my own personal org, my personal organization, where I also have 7.8 thousand followers for, I didn't know that. Why do I have 7,800? I mean, people, you should follow Dr. Dave Sire or somebody who's smart. You know, me, I'm just a clown with a big thumbs up sign. You know, a foam hand for Spring. I love Spring, right? But thank you, by the way, if you're there. I am grateful for you. I hope you get something out of following me. But it's. I don't know. 7,800 followers. That's not even a feed of it. That's not even a what do they say? It's not even a community I was trying to cultivate. I didn't know I had a community there at all. It's a wonder GitHub doesn't give you more tools to sort of interact with those people. You know, I wonder what they're all doing. I wonder what uses they've gotten out of my code. That's so cool. I also belong to 47 different organizations. A couple of those are, you know, VMware, Pivotal, whatever. But several of them are mine, right? And some of them have dozens of repositories themselves besides, right? So in addition to my 499 random repositories in my organization, I've got these other organizations. So for example, my different books, the last several books, have their own organization. And each one of those will have, you know, usually it's at least one repository per chapter, sometimes two or three or more, right? But at least one per chapter. And there's always administrivia and things like that. I've got repositories for just everything. I mean, you know, my podcast, the systems I built for my podcast are all under github.com/bootiful-podcast. The reactive-spring-book is there. Spring tips, you know, that there's a bunch of stuff. All the code goes there. And for each video, it goes in that GitHub organization. My podcast, you know, the spring tips video, the podcast, what else? I mean, just everything you can imagine that I do. Oh, this week in spring, like I actually built a whole bunch of software to help simplify the work of putting that together every week. So I don't have to spend, you know, a lot of time running between planes, sitting there trying to eke out a blog when I've got a flight to catch in 20 minutes, you know? And so I wrote software to help me with that. And a lot of that code is all of it is open source, right? I mean, virtually all of it, except for a very few exceptions. And what that means is that I don't pay for almost any of it. I mean, like if I was just thinking about all those things I just told you about, the ASCII doctor content, the files, the ASCII doctor code, the ASCII doctor text, you know, for the chapters of my last book, Reactive Spring book, that's in a private Git repository, right? But everything else about it is wide open, right? So I self-published the last book. And so in order to do that, I ended up writing a publishing pipeline. The entirety of the contents of my last book are hosted on GitHub, but so too is the publishing pipeline. And that works to the software that works to support that pipeline is also open source. So I've got a pipeline, but it uses components that live in other repositories. All that's open source. The code that ends up in that book is open source. And so all of it, everything is open source. Heck, the website, you can go to bootifulascidoctor.github.io, I think, right? GitHub, bootifulascidoctor with a hyphen between. And you'll find there's a README doc and all that stuff about how to use this pipeline to publish your own book, right? And it in turn teaches you how to use GitHub Actions, right? I have countless GitHub Actions. My goodness, I mean, it's incredible. It all ends up on GitHub. Everything except for the ASCII doctor content itself is open source. I have one private repository for all of that. And then in exchange, because it's all open source, GitHub makes it insanely easy and cheap to use. I don't know why they do this, but I couldn't be more grateful. I couldn't stop thinking about it. Apple doesn't give away iPhones, Microsoft doesn't give away Office and Windows, and Facebook doesn't give away your private data. No, they sell your private data. And those other companies, they sell things. They don't give them away. But GitHub and its owner, Microsoft these days, has always given things away. It's now a part of Microsoft, which is awesome. So thank you, GitHub, and thank you, Microsoft, for being amazing to me. Anyway, I love Microsoft, but I also love VMware, the company for which I work, and the reason is that they give away great stuff too, like, of course, Spring and RabbitMQ and Apache Geo and all of our work on Apache Tomcat and our contributions to Kubernetes, our myriad amazing contributions to Kubernetes. And, you know, it's all so that people can enjoy them and use them and be productive and deliver great software quickly and safely to production. You know what else VMware has? Amazing people. Myself, of course, present company accepted. A ton of these great people are on the same team as I am. So, first of all, poor bastards. I don't envy them, but I do appreciate them. They're amazing, and I learned a lot from them. And one of the fairly new amazing teammates that we have on the team is a legend named Layla Porter. She's in the .NET space, right? And so I just knew that she could teach me a lot. So when she joined, I asked her to join my buddy Julien Dubois, who you might know as the founder of JHipster and from his work as an Azure developer advocate over there at the big old aforementioned Microsoft Ranch, and join us for our Spring One talk. Julian and I were going to do a little talk covering some of the new stuff in Azure Spring Cloud for this year's Spring One event. And we thought, well, this could be a lot better if we had somebody with Layla's caliber on the team. And so we asked her, and she was, you know, merciful and graceful enough to say yes. And what an amazing that segment, her whole thing where she connected a .NET steel toe powered application to Azure Spring Cloud services live was just, it was really cool. I've always wanted to see that, and it was great to be able to finally see that and have it be funny and fast and credible, right? So thank you so much for that. That was great. I enjoyed it. I learned a lot, of course. And because of that, and because she knew what she was talking about, and you know, she was able to make it compelling entertainment, I was so excited, overjoyed even, when I asked her to join us for today's show. It's a short one because she's super busy, and I was grateful that she could carve out some time for the show, even if it meant she's going to have to be on the show in the after hours for her, basically after dinner. but she did it. She was great. I really appreciate it. So without further ado, here's Layla Porter. So much for joining me. I appreciate that. We don't talk. It's been so long. So
I know.
Actually, we did just, first of all, you just helped me with my streaming, which has been the bane of my existence. So first of all, a huge thanks to that. Suffer the poor people that have to watch me, but you know, I appreciate it. And then also we just did a presentation at that little conference of ours, that little shindig that our company holds just a minute ago.
That teeny tiny one called Spring.
How many people were there? Do we know? I don't even know if we got official numbers that are public that we can say, but it was more than one. Okay. It was definitely more than one person.
It's quite a lot more than one person.
Yeah. There's many, many times more than five, I would say. Some number.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. I don't want to go on. I don't want to, like, with that new expression, I don't want to spill the tea, but it's definitely more than five. So yeah, that was an event. That was fun. That was like, you just joined the team, which is a mistake on, like, we should have been begging for you to join us years ago. And the fact that it just happened right now is, it's not great. That's a bad, it reflects poorly on VMware as a whole. And,
I wouldn't say that.
I regret that we didn't have you before. You're awesome. It feels like you've been part of the team for as long as it's been a team, really.
That makes me feel happy, you saying that.
Oh, thanks. It makes me happy that you're here. I've already learned a ton, obviously. And one of the things I learned about was, obviously it's a big thing, right? But I've learned a lot about .NET, right, with you. And I don't know. You're really good at this whole .NET stuff. So I was hoping you could talk to us about that today.
About .NET in general?
But first of all, I don't butcher it, who are you? Can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Of course I can. My name is Layla Porter, and you can probably tell from my accent that I'm a very long way away from Josh right now, all the way across a continent and an ocean in UK. I am an advocate alongside Josh. I feel very privileged to be on this team. It's an awesome team. You may know me on the interwebs as Layla Codesit if you're at all involved in the .NET sphere. That's what I go by. And I generally do .NET and C#, and occasionally dabble in JavaScript if I absolutely have to. And I've been recently learning Python, which I'm not best liking that either at the moment, but then I'm such a stickler for hanging out in C#. I need to broaden my horizons.
Oh, C# is it's a whole ecosystem. It's a whole world. Because when you say C#, that implies .NET, which is bigger in theory than C#, although these days I think they're one and the same, really. Sort of like
Yeah, .NET supports F# as well, which is a functional programming language, which I keep doing F#, trying to do F#, and my head just will not get around it. I can't make it sink into my head. But I think the thing I like most about .NET is that you can do anything. You can be building games with Unity. You can be writing desktop applications, mobile applications. You can do machine learning. You can do web apps. You can basically do anything that you can dream up, you can do with .NET. And that's what I like about it. It's so versatile.
Plus it's where the Java ecosystem, I think, has failed up till now. Not to say it's always going to fail, but where we have not been great is integrating with, not legacy, but stuff that came before, you know, like Java is its own very closed little world. And that's okay if everything is written in Java. And actually, it's one of the benefits of Java is that you can find everything you need almost in Java. But that means that somebody has to reinvent it because it's only in Java, right? Whereas every other language, .NET included, every other ecosystem and every other language, .NET included, has done a great job of making it easy for that language to then call into native C code or C++ or whatever. Because you don't want to forsake all that great stuff that's already been written. Why? You know, like there's just, I mean, millions of DLLs out there and millions of jars and, dilibs and .SOs that are doing cool things that you want to use in your app, but unless you reinvent the logic in Java, it's not going to be easy to use. You know, with .NET right from the beginning, I had the ability to pin memory and do managed code alongside of native code, you know? Java, we can't do that. We can.
I didn't know that, you see. So today I learned because, you know, we have lots of interrupts in C#. Most of the time you don't need to use them. They're all part of the framework. So I know that up until recently, I mean, it may still be the case that the random API, when you use system.random, is all built on top of C++.
Yeah.
Or it might be C. I can't remember. One of those languages that I don't know. Right. And it's an interop. It builds on that. I think they are rewriting random, and that's coming out in .NET 6, I think. Don't quote me on that. But it is using underlying other code.
Right. Well, so much of Java is as well, but in the ecosystem. So, okay, if you go to Python, right? Python, in theory, is the same idea as Java. You can have a library that is written in Python, and you can install it, and it'll run on any platform on which Python runs. The truth, on the other hand, is just very different. Normally, with PHP, Perl, Ruby, Python, there's going to be some native code. Well, typically, you'll find that this Python library, in turn, uses this other Python library, which does something which calls into POSIX, right? This native API. So really, even though Python is supposed to be a portable language, it's not, right? It works on Mac and Linux and sometimes on Windows, or maybe only on Windows, but not on, and that's okay because it's really nice. You can actually do, you know, low level stuff. You can glue together your operating system APIs in ways that you couldn't from a pure sandboxed Java, you know? We have something called JNI in Java, which is Java's nightmare. something. What's the I stand for? It's basically you write C headers that you can then export as a symbol. Then you can, and then you write Java methods that are delineated with native and
in is it theory, an interrupt? I for interrupt?
Yep, it's maybe? Not. It's not live because you have to compile your Java code and you have to get these headers to line up, and it only works if you have. So you can't like. You can't just poke at a library, right? Uh-huh. You can't just take any old library and say, I want to start using you. You have to write this glue layer in C or C++. And then you write the headers of that interrupt library in such a way that Java can then see it. And when you call a Java method, it's actually calling, it's invoking this function in the C header. It's very not great. And so we have a few projects on the way, but that's not here right now. It's called Project Panama. And all I'm trying to say is I want to get Java to the point where .NET 1.0 back in 2002 was, you know, which is the invocation of existing stuff, you know. Yeah. I remember when .NET came out, right? Did you use it back in the day when it was brand new?
So you know, I had a non-traditional path into tech. So I've not been a programmer all of my career. So I started learning .NET with .NET Framework for something or other back in 2013 or 2014.
Okay,
long
time still. Yeah.
So
no wonder you're so happy. So .NET is, .NET Framework is the open source separate thing from .NET Core.
Oh, no, no. So .NET Core is the other way around. .NET Core, came out in it was still in an RC in early 2016. I can't remember when it was officially launched. I think it must have been 2016. So that was the first cross-platform open source version of .NET. Before that, everything was on .NET Framework, which was bound to Windows development, which was why it was unpopular, because you had to have Windows licenses and all of that. And you could run it on Windows, only run it on Windows servers with IIS. But with .NET Core, it really opened it up that you can develop .NET code on Linux, on Mac, that you could deploy .NET code in a container on a Linux server. So it really made writing code with C# affordable, because all of a sudden you didn't need Windows servers and Windows licensing. You could just use it on any system.
Well, so beg to disagree with you. .NET is, I think even if you look at the TimeZoo business model, if you look at Pivotals before it, you know, and we always knew there's like the second largest ecosystem after Java, maybe even the first in some places, and certainly the first in some places, is .NET. I don't think it ever became unpopular. It just became less, I don't know, hyped up or whatever, right? But it's always been, it's a testament to how good it is that even though it used to be very expensive and proprietary or whatever things you might label it from 10 years ago, 15 years ago, even though it had all these things that we could say about it, it was still number two or number one in a lot of shops. Super, super nice.
Definitely, because it's so robust for enterprise code. Mm-hmm. Whereas the sort of newcomers, shall we say, like JavaScript, they weren't robust and secure enough. I mean, obviously, a lot of that's changed now.
Oh, for sure.
But for enterprise business, you really couldn't beat C#, .NET and Java because of how robust and secure they were.
Yeah.
And that's what is still prevalent in so many enterprises. They want that secure, trusted sort of programming language, which is going to therefore bring the trust of their customers.
Totally. So let me get this right. So .NET Core is the open one?
Yes.
Okay, that's the newfangled subset of what was .NET Framework.
Yeah.
So it started off as like, you didn't have web forms and Windows forms in .NET Core, right? It was just...
No, you could sort of do them a little bit. Like some people did stuff with web forms. I don't know. I've seen people like try and butcher web forms into .NET Core. I don't know how successful that was. But what you did get were Razor pages, which was kind of like web forms, but it didn't have that massive big whopping session state thing at the bottom of the page. It was more, whereas when I first learned C#, I learned with an MVC application, which I love. I love that separation of concerns. It just felt right for the way my brain works. But a lot of people came from web forms and they're like, well, I just want everything in one page. And that's what Razor Pages did for them. And Razor Pages was great for creating class libraries. So the entire identity, .NET identity was scaffolded into your application using Razor Pages, and it was a black box because it was brought in as a DLL of all these Razor Pages in a class library. You could just scaffold in identity into your application, and it would have all of the login pages and the user management pages. You could scaffold them in individually to customize them, but it made it a bit too magic for some people. Like right. myself, I was like, what is going on? How do I edit this page? And then I was like, oh no, now I have to learn Razor Pages. And you kind of do have to learn it. And then it's not too bad. It's quite a good thing for beginners to learn, but they sort of went that way. But now last November, we had .NET 5, which was one .NET to rule them all, which yes. is bringing everything back. And then next month we have .NET 6, which is the final .NET to rule them all, where everything has now come back in to one .NET framework. Everything is going to come in underneath it.
So it's basically, do they upgrade .NET Core? .NET Core has Windows Forms and Web Forms now?
So I don't think Web Forms is going to be supported because they don't really want people to use that. But we have, for .NET 6 now, we have WinForms. WinForms is kind of deprecated as well. It's more WPF, which is Windows Presentation Foundation. We have UWP, which is Universal Windows Presentation, I think, platform, something, yeah. UWP. Yeah. And then we were supposed to get .NET MAUI, which was the next evolution of that, coming out next month, but I think that's been pushed back. Sure. We then had Blazor come out, which is C# in the browser. So it's very component-based, like React, but you can just build, there's two flavors of it. There's WASM, which is using WebAssembly, so that completely runs in the browser through a nice. Interpreter. So there's like a .NET interpreter. I don't quite get it, yeah. but it runs it into the WebAssembly code and it works beautifully. There's another flavor which uses SignalR, which I love SignalR, and that's like the Blazor server. SignalR is a wrapper around WebSockets. But it's more than just that. It has beautiful failovers. It will resort to HTTP if everything goes out the window. And it's just a beautiful thing to use if you need that real-timeness. So SignalR does that. And Blazor Server utilizes SignalR out the box. And then I think, I'm not sure the state of Unity. I'm not sure if that's still running a mono version. I haven't looked into that recently. But everything now is starting to come in under .NET 6.
So that sounds a bit like the SignalR thing. I'm going to just put this here as a note to myself to investigate, because that sounds really cool. We have something called sock.js, and there's a protocol called Stomp. It sounds like that might... We might be copying that. I don't know if we are in the Java ecosystem. Now, you just mentioned Mono. For those that don't know, that's Miguel de Icaza. He's one of the people that, was he the creator of GNOME? You know, the Linux GNOME desktop, I think, or co-founder. After he did that in Linux years ago, right? The GNOME desktop has been around for decades. And then I remember like 15, 20 years ago, he wanted to like have a clean room implementation of .NET. So he created Mono, which is... Spanish for monkey, right? And I remember there was after like a lot of controversy about this, because I remember at one point back in the Ballmer era, you know, people were antagonistic towards him, you know, and then eventually they ended up buying his company, Xamarin.
They came back in. Xamarin, yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually, not only do they now embrace it, but it's now, I think, the foundations for the Linux and the Mac port.
Definitely. It was referenced, if not like the early versions of .NET Core were built on it. Yeah. I get fuzzy with this because they changed it. So when .NET Core first came out, they had version 1. And then when version 2 came out, they scrapped everything, redid the whole thing. So version 1 was using JSON to structure like the configuration of your project files and all your dependencies, I think, so long ago now. And I try and shove it out my brain. Once we don't use it anymore, I'm like, right, throw out that bit of knowledge. I don't need it anymore. Right. So I'm dredging up bits and pieces that may be right, may be wrong. And then when we went to version 2, we've got the current sort of layout. It has changed periodically. We went to a long-term support with 3.1. And that's kind of the model we had for .NET 5. Now, .NET 6, they're throwing out the way we structure projects yet again, which is causing a little bit of uproar in the community. We can still do it the old way, but the new way is supposed to be more modularized, more tree-shaking, less bump, less boilerplate, easier for beginners, and it's all changing again. So the thing now is every other year we're getting an LTS version and we're getting a new version of .NET every year. So the .NET 6 is our new LTS, which is coming out next month. And then in 2023, we'll get a new LTS again. And they're going to be much faster on this annual release cycle.
I wonder if the Java ecosystem, you know, we're doing the same. We just, so up in like 3 years ago in Java 9, starting in Java 9, which has, we set up a cadence of every 6 months, we'll release a new version of Java, just calendar-based, not like...
Right.
Right. So, but then we also said every 3 years, not two, which is what you just said, 3 years, we'll have an LTS, right? And then just recently, and I'm now wondering if we're just taking another page from the .NET community, just recently they announced that they want to do two-year LTSs instead, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
And I think it makes great sense because, of course, you know, the more you integrate, the faster people will do it, and the less... less burden, the less of a hurdle it is to do it when you do actually do it, which gets us to one of the reasons I love the .NET ecosystem, which is, yes, Microsoft is famous for preserving backwards compatibility. There are stories of them working with game developers that have games that ran on Windows 95 and working with them to make it work on Windows, you know, like Vista and all that, and Windows on Windows 10. You know, these games are like 20 years old, but they're famous for sending people to collaborate, to be partners with these game development shops and these software developers, because they want every app that has ever run on Windows to continue running on Windows. And that's, I love that about them over here. And the Java ecosystem has taken that same tact for Java itself. But that Microsoft, as far as .NET is concerned, is like, yeah, screw everything out. You know, every 6 months, we're going to create something brand new. So you just mentioned like three different ways to create web UI, Windows UIs in the .NET community. And I remember there was a Silverlight, and there's also there's another thing around that time as well for desktop apps. And then there's a point when Microsoft was doing like HTML and flat surfaces. And I remember that was JavaScript or something. I mean, they're really out with the old very quick, you know, and I love that.
So
about
we had Silverlight just went out of support yesterday or the day before. I think it was Wednesday, actually, that went out of support. So a lot of people are mourning the loss of it. But Silverlight went into Blazor. It went into .NET Core. So the legacy of Silverlight comes through into other things. I mean, Silverlight was pretty awesome. You could build.
Yeah.
I mean, my fiance and I built a Windows 7 game using Silverlight, but he built it. I did all the artwork for it. You know, so we did that. But you could build, I mean, it was like a browser plugin. So it was a competitor to Flash, which was the first programming language I did, you know, ActionScript with Flash.
Yeah. That was a great one.
You know, it's, they haven't gotten rid of the WinForm. You can still do a bit of WinForms. You can still I think, were you thinking XAML? I mean, yes. XAML.
Yes.
Yeah.
It just changed every minute, which is good. It's disruptive for a hot minute, but the tool, because Microsoft has had a monopoly on the tooling, people have a very centralized experience for upgrading their code. They don't have to like figure out how to refactor, they just press the button and the wizard does it for you. And it's meant that the .NET ecosystem, while you might say, if you're cynical, that it was just a copy of Java 20 plus years ago, it is far more in so many ways now than the Java language, you know? And so that's one of the things I love about C#, is we've talked about this before. It's such a nice language. It is such a nice language. And I've always been so jealous of all these amazing features that have just been, you know, wholly integrated into C# and the teething pain required to appreciate those features has long since passed, because people just, they just dig in. They don't, there's no like pushing back. It's just like, okay, I'll spend a few weeks. We'll be fine. It'll be okay, you know? And we have this stuff. And now
there's a lot of eye rolling when this happens, and a lot of moaning and groaning and like huffing and puffing, but we just get on with it.
Get on with it. Exactly. And this has meant that .NET, to its credit, has adopted, it's become a multi-platform, multi-language, multi-modal sort of platform, like we just talked about, and, you know, desktop UIs, web apps, games, mobile through Xamarin, I think, remember that. I remember you can do iOS and Android compilation from your...
Yeah, it supports both.
There's also now microservices, ASP.NET is great for REST and APIs and all that. And then you and I, we just looked at Steeltoe. You did a segment on that presentation for Spring One recently, supporting Steeltoe, which is all the... What is that? It's like a...
library of sort of things to help you connect stuff in your distributed systems to other stuff. And we got my .NET application speaking to your service discovery. So it has tools, libraries and APIs in there to help you talk to Eureka and Console and all these other things that you have in Spring, which we don't really have in .NET. So we can start sharing resources now. We were on Azure Spring Cloud, weren't we? And we were just deploying both to that. So it was pretty good.
That is so cool. Yeah, we I was really impressed because you got it all. We watched you code from start.steeltoe.io, I think it was.
Yeah.
And you were able to build up this incredible app, and it was really, really concise and elegant. And I just, you know, I'm a big fan. What are you working on? Where can people find you if you want to be found on the intertubes?
Layla codes it, and I've got my brand new show coming out on the 23rd of November on the VMware Tanzu Twitch channel. You'll have to come on that, Josh, and we'll build some stuff.
Yes, please.
So that's called .NET in the Wild. So it's going to be a weekly show. We're going to have lots of cool guests. Where it's going to be a little bit of a mix-up. We'll have it's going to be a bit wild. We'll have guests. We'll have code. We'll have Josh's. We'll have all sorts of things happening on it and having fun. And then meantime, it's conference season. So I'm speaking at lots of conferences. You can find me on my own Twitch channel as well on Layla Codes It, although I'm having a little break at the moment because everything's a bit hectic. But yeah, I'll be hanging around with Josh. Okay? Maybe I'll get to do some more like speaky events with you, Josh. That was fun.
Please, I would love to learn more. You're on Twitter?
I am at Layla Codes It.
So LaCodesit.
That's it. That's the one.
Thank you, Layla. I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. So take care, everybody.
A Bootiful podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email or at starbuxman on Twitter, where, of course, my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs' Them from Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs' Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license. I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.